This podcast is designed to help you understand the laws of our land. I am your host, Hattie Savari, and here to help you every step of the way, whether you are a tenant, landlord, parent, child, employee, employer, neighbour or business owner, and we are all most certainly consumers. The law is in your life every single day with over 180 episodes and 5 million downloads. Get ready to listen and empower yourself with tons of jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Hello and welcome back to our podcast at Get Legally Speaking. Our legal conversation today will be about business partner disputes and commercial injunctions. This is part two of this topic, so please do listen to our part one. I am joined by barrister Duncan McComb from Maitland Chambers in London. Duncan specialises in commercial litigation and arbitration, and he regularly appears in the business and property courts of England and Wales, advising in various complex areas of commercial law, company law and insolvency, often involving urgent injunction applications. He also has particular expertise in proceedings involving states or state entities, having advised and represented nation states, state-owned bodies, and those seeking to make claims against states. Duncan, hello and good morning.
Hi, Hattie. Thank you very much for having me.
It's always a pleasure to have you, Duncan. We're going to talk about business partner disputes and particularly commercial injunctions. And just to let our listeners know what they can hear in terms of the part one that we covered on this topic, we covered the questions on what do we mean by a commercial injunction? Are there particular types of injunction? When can you apply for an injunction? And what test will the court apply when it is considering whether to grant an injunction? So listeners, you can hear all about that if you go to our part one. Now we're going to go on and talk about our questions for part two. So the first question that we're going to discuss, Duncan, is what do we mean by a without notice injunction and when are they available?
Yeah, well, this is an important and sort of interesting area because it can be very, very useful for people. I mean, normally when you're applying to court for an order against someone, I mean, you understandably need to tell that person that you're going to do that, so that they have an opportunity of defending themselves and saying to the court, well, the order shouldn't be made. But a without notice injunction is different because, as the name would suggest, this is a time where you can apply to the court for an injunction without notice to the party you're seeking an order against. And that's available really in two situations. The first is where if you inform the other party that you're going to be seeking an order against them, there would be a risk that that party would take steps to render an injunction pointless before the hearing can even take place. So sort of the classic example of that is a freezing injunction. I think we discussed freezing injunctions last time.
I was just going to say, give us an example of that, of rendering an injunction pointless.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you seek a freezing injunction because you're worried that the other party that you want to sue is going to remove their assets from the jurisdiction or just generally make it impossible for you to enforce against their assets. And you want an injunction to stop them doing that. And you don't want to tell them that you're applying for that injunction because they might do it before before that injunction can even be heard. That injunction application can even be heard. So that's sort of the first classic situation you might go without notice. And the second is where matters are basically so urgent that you just don't have time to give the other party proper notice. But even if that's the case, you generally should give them as much notice as you can. You can't just not tell them at all. You just need to say, look, this is really, really urgent. We're going to court now. Come if you like, sort of thing.
So you can still make a without notice application, but if you called up the other side and said, look, we're going to court today to make this application, if you wish to turn up, then turn up, even though you're going without notice.
Yeah, I mean, that's why it sounds a bit strange, doesn't it, to make
because with non-molestation orders
without notice application,
things like that, without notice.
Yeah, quite. But I mean, by without notice, it means without the full amount of notice that you would normally have to give. So, I mean, that's really what it means. I mean, normally you'd have to give a reasonable amount of notice that, I mean, I think we're going to go over how you make an application for an injunction, but normally there's a process that's gone through that takes a reasonable amount of time, which means that a respondent, so someone you're seeking an order against, will have some time to try to deal with it. Whereas if you're phoning them up and saying, well, we're going to court today or we're going to court tomorrow, turn up if you like, then the court basically sees that as them not having notice or effectively not having notice because they haven't really got any time to respond.
To prepare and do. No, exactly. So I totally get it. So people would look at potentially in a business partner dispute where a commercial injunction is required, look at applying for a without notice injunction if they feel that the other side may take steps to try and defeat their application. And as you quite rightly pointed out, they might get rid of assets that you're looking at trying to freeze. They might cause some damage to the business in some shape or form, reputational damage or product damage, or they might be able to do something which is going to actually be detrimental to the overall dispute.
Yeah, exactly. And it would just make the injunction pointless because the thing you're trying to stop has already happened.
Yeah. That's get it.
That's the main reason.
Yeah, because ultimately injunctions are sought in disputes. They're not sort of sought when the going is good and everyone's getting on and they have a great understanding. So I completely get that, how it can become very sensitive in a contentious situation. So let's talk about the advantages and the disadvantages of seeking an injunction, please, Duncan.
Yeah, I think we're really talking about interim injunctions here because, you know, the advantages and disadvantages of a final injunction, we discussed that distinction last time, didn't we? A final injunction and interim injunction.
Yes.
An interim injunction is only temporary.
Yes, until everything is heard and the court's heard decided.
Exactly. So, I mean, final injunctions are, that's just
self-explanatory.
Exactly. Whereas interim injunctions, there's more of a decision to make about whether you would go for one or not. I mean, the advantages of interim injunctions, you get your order. You might get your order, which is great. And it acts that's a very powerful tool to ensure that matters aren't taken out of your hands before trial, making a trial essentially pointless. But as far as disadvantages are concerned, these are probably a bit more complicated and a bit more interesting for your listeners. The first is that even if you get your order, I mean, it can often be pretty costly. These are urgent applications, the estate generally, and the stakes are pretty high, and that will inevitably tend to mean that they're expensive to get. Also, if you get your order, you have to give what's called a cross-undertaking in damages. And what that means is that you promise to the court that if it turns out in the end that your injunction was wrongly granted, so generally, well, often if you lose a trial, for example, and it shows that actually you had no basis to seek your injunction in the first place, then you'll compensate the other side for any losses that have been caused by the injunction.
And I just want to just explain that. So if you're in a trial over a business partner dispute outside of the injunction completely, and you need to apply for a commercial injunction, for an urgent injunction as part of those proceedings or to assist those proceedings, and if you ultimately lose the bigger case that you're in court from, and you've gone and got this injunction and you've succeeded in getting it, even on an interim basis, here, whether it's gone to the final nth degree or not, in the interim, if you've caused any damages to the other side and not won your bigger case at court, then the other side can come after you for their costs and losses and damages caused to them while your interim injunction was in place.
Yeah, that the interim injunction caused. That's exactly right. So I mean, I think that
This really is the high rollers table here. There's no doubt about that. You've got to have some steely balls somewhere to go for one of these babies.
Yeah. You have to think very hard about it. I mean, the classic example would be a freezing injunction again. I mean, you can imagine how if you freeze the other side's bank accounts, I mean, this can have a catastrophic effect on their business, for which they might never recover.
And their life, and their personal life as well.
Yeah, exactly. And the compensation you might have to give them if it turns out that was wrongly granted can be enormous.
Do your homework. Make sure your legal team do their homework. Make sure you
exactly
are so
right.
on it.
Exactly right. Exactly right. And I mean, those are the potential disadvantages, even if you get your order. Of course, if you fail to get your order, or even worse, you get your order and then you lose a trial, as we've just been discussing, all the orders set aside later, then, as you said, you have to pay the other side's costs. So that's obviously bad news. And then finally, the other thing to bear in mind, I think, with injunctions is that, or interim injunctions, is they are a nuclear option, I think, as we discussed last time. So they lead to a very rapid escalation of costs and tension on both sides, and quickly sets you on a path to trial, which often makes, you know, anything like settlement much more difficult.
Yes, I mean we just touched upon, you know, do your homework, make sure your legal team does their homework, because there are big stakes here at the table, so to speak. And what types of key points would you say that somebody should look at seeking and finding out before you go into a hearing to try and get an urgent injunction?
One of the most important things that you need to bear in mind, if you're going without notice here, which is something I meant to talk about when we're talking about without notice injunctions, but it's a good thing to talk about here as well. I mean, one of the things you really do need to prepare about is that if you're going without notice and you're making an application without notice, you have a duty of what the court calls full and frank disclosure. So this means that you need to raise with the court any reasons why the injunction shouldn't be granted, which is slightly counterintuitive, because, you know, you're obviously there applying to say that the injunction should be granted. But the reason for that is that the court wants to make sure as much as possible that, because the other side isn't there, that it has all the information it needs to make a proper and fair decision. So
you've got to argue that side as well. So you've got to say, right, if the opponent says this shouldn't be made because of X, Y, and Z, here are the arguments against that. So it's sort of showing the court to both sides of the coin on application.
That's exactly right. And so you need to do your homework as to thinking about, well, what would, if the other side were here, what would they say? And then, I mean, you can explain why you think they would be wrong. That's absolutely fine. But you could say, well, look, this is what they would say. And if you don't do that, then you can get in very serious trouble, because the other, you know, these interim injunctions, they're only, particularly the ones without notice, are only temporary. And so once the other side gets the order, there's normally what's called a return date, where everyone turns up to the court again, normally in 2 weeks' time.
To have their say and to spill the beans.
Exactly. And if it turns out at that stage you haven't complied with your duty of full and frank disclosure, then that's a reason on its own for the injunction to be discharged. So even if the court thinks, well, actually, even if I'd known all this stuff, I would have probably still granted the injunction anyway, I still think I'm going to discharge it, because it's in, you know, this duty of full and frank disclosure is an important one, and we need to make sure that people abide by it. So it's sort of a deterrent. I'm going to just discharge the injunction, which is obviously, you know, it doesn't happen very often, but it does happen once in a while, and it is, that's a terrible thing to happen.
No, absolutely. And I think it's really
one of the most important things to do is you need to get, you need to make sure that you understand what the other side might say.
No, absolutely. And I think that's great practice generally in the legal world, Duncan, isn't it? To get your strategy right, to get your story right, to have done your homework, to know exactly why you're doing what you're doing, and, you know, to have considered the other side's points in detail, because that may change your mind about going for an injunction. You might think, right, well, you know, if I'm going to try and get an urgent injunction on this basis and they say that, then that's really going to render what I'm doing a bit silly and shouldn't, you know, put it in a position and a place where I shouldn't really be going for an injunction at all. So I think it's a good way to assess your position, really, with your legal team before you run off to get an urgent injunction, and really understand the meaning of it. And as you've quite rightly outlined, you know, the implications and what can come of that if it doesn't go down the route you want it to in the wider circumstances of having a, you know, the bigger problem at court. and what that could mean, which is why I said you really have to have a steely pair to say, right, we'll have one of those as well, please, as part of any commercial business dispute. But let's now talk about what happens at the hearing. So let's talk about what happens at a without notice hearing.
Before the hearing, what you will have done is you will have issued your application notice and you would have filed it in court with your evidence in support, which is normally just in the form of a witness statement with exhibits. And then you will normally also have to file with court your draft order, so the order that you want it to make, and then your skeleton argument, which is basically sort of a summary of the argument you're going to make at the hearing. If it's without notice, then it'll often be pretty urgent. So there's normally a judge on duty at the court to deal with that sort of urgent application. So you would, in normal times, you would turn up to court with all your papers, and you just
try and get slotted into the day's hearings.
Yeah, and they're very accommodating. You know, they understand that sometimes these things are incredibly urgent and need dealing with. And then, I mean, if you're in a situation where you have to deal with something out of hours, there is, you know, when the courts aren't open, for example, there is normally a judge on call as well to grant these sort of urgent injunction applications. I mean, when you
and
hear
we say
about
normal times because we're in a pandemic, and obviously at the moment, you know, courthouses are not fully open and practicing in the normal way that they used to.
Yeah, quite. But I mean, it's still possible to get an injunction. It will just be done over Skype for Business, which the court often use, or Teams or something like that. So and then you would turn to court and you make your arguments and you'd see if you'd get your order. I mean, that would be sort of without notice. If it's on notice, you'd serve your application notice and your witness statement in support on the other side. They normally put in evidence in response. You would sometimes have an opportunity to put in evidence in response to that, and then you'd all go along to your hearing and you'd have an argument between the two sides. And normally the way that works in the hearing is that the judge will have read both sides' evidence, will have read both sides' skeleton argument, and then have the applicant going first, saying why they think the injunction should be granted. Then you'd have a respondent saying why they shouldn't, and then the applicant normally has a chance to just reply to that, and then the judge will make their decision. And normally the judge will try to make a judgment there and then, you know, unless
it needs further information or documentation
or thinking
some form
time
of disclosure. Oh yes, well,
to be
indeed
honest, a lot of it would just be thinking, you know, thinking time. If it's a very complicated case or the evidence is very extensive, you know, may well say, well, look, I hear the arguments, I'll go away and I'll write my judgment up. I'll let you know when it's done. But I mean, normally
yes, more nerves fall into the courtroom. Everybody leaves shaking, not knowing what's going on.
Exactly. But normally they'll try and make their decision there and then.
Yes. Well, I mean, you make it sound so easy, Duncan, really. but yes, we know.
I don't want to give that impression at all.
No, no, not at all.
It's all quite hard work and a bit nerve-wracking, as you say.
But, yes.
But it's actually, I think it's a very good example of where the English courts do quite a good job. You know, these interim injunctions are
powerful. They're powerful. They're powerful tools, aren't they? When required and when used appropriately, and when they, you know, are executed and they do the job they're supposed to do, which is prevent any party from defeating, you know, the object of a claim or getting rid of evidence or creating damage to a business in some shape or form. But you know, it's sad because the COVID pandemic has created an alarming rate of business disputes. Brexit has also contributed to business disputes, contract disputes, some actually where people genuinely just don't know what the law in that area is, and they're both sides are arguing differently based on their interpretations, based on their means, based on what they can and can't do. So yes, I think that it's very useful for people to know that injunctions, commercial injunctions, exist, but also the risks that come with, you know, trying to obtain a commercial injunction, and also the benefits that a commercial injunction can bring.
Yeah, quite. And then
any last words of wisdom, Duncan?
Well, gosh, no words of wisdom from me. I suppose the one of the points I would just emphasise again is that, as you said as well, these are powerful and very useful weapons, but something that need to be considered very, very carefully before they're applied for, because they can have quite a lot of bad unintended consequences. And it's difficult to do that because, you know, these often happen in very urgent situations. But it can often make sense to, even just for a matter of hours, to step back and just think with your lawyers, you know, is this really what we want and need before going for it? Because things can be taken out of your control quite quickly when everything's put in train urgently and very quickly.
Absolutely, and weigh up the options. You know, literally sleep on it. Weigh up both options. Look at the good that can come with it, the bad that can come with it, the worst that can happen with it, the best outcome that can happen with it, the costs, the commerciality, the cost of, as you said, it's they're urgent. Anything urgent and legal is expensive anyway. But then when you add urgent to it as well, because lots of man hours and work goes into these things, and you know, you've got to think, well, how does it affect the commerciality of the overall claim? Throwing in potentially what could be thousands of pounds in cost to try and get a commercial injunction, how does that weigh up with what happens if you get it and what happens if you don't get it? So there are lots and lots of considerations. But Duncan, it's always a pleasure to have you. So thank you ever so much for your time today.
Thank you very much for having me. And thanks again for putting this podcast together. I think it's great.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very, very much. And I'll say to our listeners, don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcasts. And you can find us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn and YouTube by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at getlegallyspeaking.com. Thank you for listening.